welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I think we should rename this podcast Talking Pictures. Maybe we should do that, you know? What
or
do you think, Bill
just
McCuddy?
Somebody's living room, because that's where we now do the show.
That's right. And we're at Bill McCuddy's apartment today, along with Bill Bregoli. Hi, Bill.
Hi there.
And Bill McCuddy. What a nice apartment you have, Bill. I've been
Thank
here many
you.
Times.
Thank you. We were at your place last week.
That's right. That's right. We're back in the trenches until we get the show on the air, Talking Pictures, which, again, I say again, I won't say that I'm very close, but I'm saying that I have put a lot of feelers out there. I went to the Emmys on Sunday
well,
night.
Well, the New York
night.
Emmys.
The New York Emmys right. on Saturday night and spoke to
Let's
a lot
quell
of,
the audience's enthusiasm for a second.
Well, I mean, well, the point is that a lot of people were there that could potentially put the show on the air. So I spoke to them, and we'll see.
You
what
got
happens.
A lot of, gee, it's so we're so sorry for you, didn't you? Come on. Come on. That's what they do.
No, I actually went beyond that. I'm going to.
You got a little encouragement.
People cried. Was there any crying?
No. There's no crying in. There's no crying in baseball,
in TV.
And there's no crying in television. So no, I'll keep you posted. I'm working on it. I'm working very hard.
And we want to thank everybody who's tweeted and sent us emails and stuff. There's been a lot of response to that, and we're very humbled.
Yeah, tweet
by it.
Us at Neil Rose and Apples. At
Bill McCuddy.
And Bill Bregoli does not have
a tweet.
Does not have a tweet. Or
so
at Rossman,
send him care
if you
of.
Want to speak to Lisa Rossman, who's not here today, but will be back with us shortly. We'll read some of your tweets during the podcast.
At Romance, isn't she? Rosmance?
Rossmance, at Rossmance, Rossmance.
Yeah.
And I'm, again, at Neil Rose and Apples, and Bill is at...
Today we're going to talk about King Arthur.
We're going to talk about King Arthur, that's right.
Man, was that the most uncomfortable interview? Did you guys see on Kimmel the other night when David Spade, who sat in... Kimmel's been off for a couple of nights, and...
Well, you know what's
famous
going on with
people,
Kimmel.
Yes, of course. He's had a... And what a nice... sort of outreaching across all of the late night. Colbert said something about it, and he had a child who was born with a heart defect, I guess. And
yes,
he's been sort of sitting vigil. He came back like a night or two ago and thanked everybody. But man, I got to tell you, Guy Ritchie, who I know you guys have interviewed, the toughest to extract. I thought De Niro was rough. At one point, David Spade is talking, and it obviously can't engage this man at all. And he looks at Guy Ritchie and goes, "Now you go." Because that's the only way he could get some to start talking. And the whole audience cracked up. I mean, the guy is like a stone wall.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, for the King Arthur junket, we did a press conference with Guy Ritchie, Charlie Hunnam, and Jai Manhunsu. And Ritchie was actually fairly...
Animated?
Animated, yeah. He wasn't too bad.
I interviewed him once for something, and he was very personable. We were talking about, actually, it was right after he got divorced from Madonna, and he was talking about how...
Well, I'm sure he wanted to talk about that.
No, he did.
I bet he did.
No, he did.
He was
talking about, he wasn't talking about where the marriage went wrong, but he was talking about making movies, and, it was during the tumultuous time during his marriage, and I don't know.
Sex good? Did you ask him that?
Did not go down that
Come
road.
Come on.
Did not go down that road. Interviewed Madonna also several times. She was actually...
We did him for... Didn't we all do him for Snatch? I think he did... I've definitely... He was just in a bad mood or something.
Maybe. I've never had a bad experience.
I'm glad you had a wonderful experience
That's
with him.
Right.
So who did we hear from at King Arthur?
Well, we hear from Charlie Hunnam, who said that... Kind of said that he wanted this role for a long time. Actually, somebody asked him if he played with swords and stuff in the backyard. And sure enough, he did.
I grew up in the countryside, and I was always carving sticks into swords. I had one particular that was my masterpiece that I whittled down from a very large piece of wood into my version of Excalibur. And I'd spend all day trying to coerce my big brother into engaging me in combat.
That could have ended in tears. That sounds like...
Interesting.
Was he grounded for that, did he mention?
No, he didn't. But we also talked to Jai Manhunsu, and someone asked him about his costume and what he thought of his costume, because he plays sort of a knight, and when they get everybody in chainmail and all that stuff, it can be a little problematic.
You start putting the costume together, it looks really exciting. Obviously you're getting to the character, and you forget, it's on the first day of shooting that you realize, you need to use the restroom.
I mean, I watch all of those kinds of movies with tons of costuming and wonder, What do they do? Are they wearing like Depends or?
Well, you know the famous story from Gone with the Wind, where Victor Fleming, the director of Gone with the Wind, it was either him or Selznick who produced it, insisted that the underwear that all of the people were wearing, and there's thousands of people, including extras on the set, was period underwear. And somebody said, you know, one of the other producers said, like, well, who'll know the difference? You know, and the answer was, the actors will know the difference. So I don't know, you know, whether or not that's some.
But in 1936, it was probably still in stores.
39. Well, you know, whether or not that's some public relations story that was manufactured, or whether indeed they did wear the actual, you know, period undergarments, I couldn't tell you. But yeah, I don't know what they're wearing underneath the King Arthur, you know, outfits. That's an interesting question. What do you think of King Arthur, Bill?
It's fun to watch because Guy Ritchie knows his way around exposition. So instead of a character just explaining how something happened to the other characters, he does that. But visually, you get sort of a reenactment of what he's talking about done in fast motion. He does really cool things like strapping GoPro cameras to his actors as they chase each other around.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it have any, because neither Neil or I have seen it, has it have any other convention, like updated conventions? Like, I'm just thinking.
Well, he changed the myth around.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
The stone is, that the sword is in.
The sword and the stone.
That's right. Well, the stone is actually sort of petrified remains of Arthur's father, who was killed by this character played by Jude Law.
So the sword is in a stoned guy?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. And when you look at it, you'll see he's this hunched over guy, and the
really?
Sword is in
sounds like
is
he was stoned when he came up with this
idea.
Also, there are these gigantic CGI elephants in the movie, too, which is kind of odd. You wouldn't expect, not like Hannibal's elephants, I guess. So they gave him
so some artistic license.
Right. They gave him too much money to make the film, but it's still engaging.
So the problem I have with a lot of Guy Ritchie films, and I wonder, I know that Bill McCuddy loves Guy Ritchie films, but
I forgive them, that's what I'm going to say.
So what I'm asking about this one is I find that the accents a lot of times are unintelligible in these Guy Ritchie films. They're these hardcore.
We're like Snatch and like.
I don't know. Would you say, would that be a Cockney accent? Or would,
yeah. So, well, I'm sure there are many. We're going to offend a lot of people. There's probably many different versions of Cockney and many different East End, West End, all kinds of different
they're
English
little,
accents.
They're a little thick in this.
And he's probably doing them all.
He also does an odd thing in that he has a multicultural cast. So there's this character they call, I think they call him Kung Fu George. There's an Asian actor.
Kung Fu George?
Yeah, there's a Kung Fu George. So,
wow.
So that's another anachronism in the movie, in that some of the characters are using Kung Fu moves.
But not going to make a ton of money.
It'll probably do okay, but I don't think it's going to make a ton of money.
I mean, it's still coming. It's got Guardians of the Galaxy 2 still out there. What else is out there?
Snatched.
Yeah, Snatched.
Which oh, I yeah. also
now,
saw.
Now, let's talk about that, Neil, because have you been looking forward to Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn the way no one else has?
Well, no, I have not been. You know, I think that...
The trailer tells you the whole movie. I've seen it in the commercials many times. I mean, you know, all the gags are in it. Was there anything fresh in the film?
Yeah, tell me about it. Tell us again. Bill Bregoli, the one movie watcher this week, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, there is one point where I really felt bad for Amy Schumer when that she needed a joke really badly, so she exposes the breast. So there's one breast in the movie. There's Wanda Sykes doing the usual Wanda Sykes thing with she has a supposedly platonic friend in it played by Joan Cusack who doesn't really speak.
Is it going to do any business at all?
Oh, it'll do business because everybody likes Amy
Schumer. Yeah, it's going to open pretty strong.
Once they get to it, it's going to
But it's no train wreck.
Right, it is no train wreck. It is repetitious.
But is it a train wreck? It's no train wreck.
On some respects, it is. I don't know how they're going to get away with some of the racial stereotyping in the movie, but all the Colombians.
Yeah, I read about
the
Colombians are all carrying, machine guns
and.
And Goldie Hawn looks okay.
Well, Goldie Hawn
in her 70s and still does some of the.
Hasn't worked in 15 years.
15 years, and you know there was an Entertainment Weekly cover the other day that they must have airbrushed the shit out of this thing because Goldie Hawn. Looked the same age as Amy Schumer did in this particular cover.
They're sisters.
So, you know, I don't know. So how's Goldie Hawn, you know?
Sort of underplaying her character to the point where you wonder if she's even interested.
Is she look? How does she look? Does she look like really plastic surgery?
Yeah, for a few minutes I was looking at going, all right, what she had done and after a list of about
she's in her
things.
70s.
Yeah,
and she does some of her own stunts in this damn thing, for Christ's sake.
She's game enough.
Yeah.
But, She doesn't seem
according
all that
to Schumer, she insisted on it.
Doesn't seem all that
some
interested
places.
In it.
Has
and she's not ditzy, right? That's
right,
the other
she's
thing.
Not
she's
ditzy,
not playing the girl from Laugh-In
right.
or any of the
Bikini, thank God.
Soccer to me.
Right.
Has she done any promotion whatsoever for this movie?
Like yeah, they were on the MTV. They gave the big award out at the MTV Movie Awards.
Yeah, but has she done
night.
Like a talk show? Has she been like on Colbert or has she been on like Kimmel? Or
I think they have.
Surely, yeah. We've
yeah,
still got
I
a few nights.
Definitely Schumer has. I saw Schumer on Colbert the other night. And I think they said, yeah, he said Goldie was here the night before, I think. So they're out pushing it. I mean, look, I'm sure Goldie Hawn is very happy to have a big role.
I wouldn't be surprised if it outgrossed King Arthur this weekend.
Seriously?
Yeah. But I don't
so
think
you're
it'll...
predicting number one at the box office for this?
No, I'm not predicting
no,
number one
No, there's too much
this.
Big stuff to hang
you
on.
Guardians of the Galaxy
2.
In the second week, we'll probably do... If it made $140 million in this first week, it'll probably do about $70
million
in the second week.
Yeah.
And I don't see King Arthur doing $70, maybe $50. And
are people interested in a King Arthur film, though? I mean, I know it's King Arthur done extremely
this is set up to be a franchise,
violently.
By
what?
The way. When you look at it, the last thing they're doing in... Oh, here comes the spoiler, folks. The last thing they're doing in the movie... is building the round table. So that'll be the next one, the Knights of the Round Table.
Right.
This is just pulling the sword from the stone in this one. So there's a lot more legend to go.
Any contemporary music, like in A Knight's Tale or anything
yeah,
like
that? Yeah, sort of, I can't name the composer. He wanted Hans Zimmer and couldn't get him and hired another guy who he apparently fought with quite a bit during the movie, though he's happy with what he got. And there's some songs in there, but they sound sort of like reworked old Celtic songs.
Okay.
Do you remember this movie? I'm trying to think of the name of it, where it was also set in that King Arthur period, but they used contemporary rock songs.
I just said A Knight's Tale. Are you listening to me at all?
I
just said, is it like A Knight's Tale where it uses contemporary music?
No, I didn't hear you.
If you're just joining us, this is Sitting Around Talking Movies, and Neil Rosen is just joining us.
That's right. That's right. Heath Ledger, yes.
Yeah, one of Heath Ledger's last films.
Yeah,
close to, no,
that wasn't
really
a bad
close.
Movie. But they're using Celtic music. So yeah,
there's sort of Celtic, yeah.
They're using
very
Celtic
theme-y
music.
Kind of stuff.
All right.
That okay. Sossaman chick was in it, too. What's her name?
Right, Rosamund?
She doesn't work much,
yeah.
But she's super cute.
So this is going to be a barrage of summer, King Arthur. Who's that appealing to? I mean, who wants to go see that, really? I mean, is it...
Well, who wanted to go see Man from U.N.C.L.E., except that it was given
nobody,
a twist?
Apparently.
And who wanted to see Sherlock Holmes? Those have made a lot of money.
I don't think Man from U.N.C.L.E. made a lot of money.
And it did okay. It didn't do great, but
I remember it doing too well. But Sherlock Holmes did fine, and they made a couple of them, and then... If they're lucky, make a couple of this because Warner Brothers needs a hit really badly.
I got to tell you, I'm not looking. There are so few movies that I'm looking forward to this summer.
I'll tell you the one I'm looking forward to.
The Big Sick?
Oh,
nope.
Boy.
You know about the Big Sick?
Yeah, I know about the Big Sick, but I'm not looking forward to that.
What are you looking forward to?
The one exciting Chris Nolan film, Dunkirk.
Oh, yeah, Dunkirk looks really interesting.
Yeah,
I've seen, and they say that's,
grown up and
that's already in the
to...
Oscar race, supposedly,
yeah.
According to a couple of sites.
Well, yeah. I'm seeing the new Madoff HBO movie this week with Robert De Niro playing Bernie Madoff.
And... You know, this is so Hollywood. This is exactly what's happening. Every time one movie comes out, another one. So we got Richard Dreyfuss.
That was
playing,
great, by the way, that multi-part ABC
playing,
series. That was terrific.
But now it's on CNBC next week.
The
Richard Dreyfuss one. And because Hollywood is like a Noah's Ark, man. Everything comes out in twos. So we got two, and I'm looking forward to the De Niro one. Michelle Pfeiffer looks great. It just got a great review in the Hollywood Reporter.
I hear it's great, and we'll tell you about it next week. You know, I'm seeing it tomorrow. When does it actually air on HBO?
This weekend, I think, on Mother's Day.
So we'll talk
I think
about
it's
it
Sunday
tomorrow,
night. Yeah, we'll talk about it next week.
But I'm
something
excited.
That Mrs. McCuddy and I watched that's new on demand this week stars a woman that you really liked from Diary of a Teenage Girl last year.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Belle Powley.
Belle Powley.
Belle Powley.
If you haven't seen, by the way, before you tell, what's the name of the movie?
Carrie Pilby.
Okay, before we get into that, I will tell you that if you want a great on-demand rental or DVD rental, Diary of a Teenage Girl is just such a terrific movie. It's with, first of all, she was a
Kristen Wiig is amazing in it.
Yeah.
As the mom. And her boyfriend is played by... Peter Sarsgaard, right?
Peter Sarsgaard.
Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah.
Son of Stellan Skarsgård.
Right.
Who you're talking about is Peter Sarsgaard, who was in that movie that I love that you hated called Experimenter, as well as Kinsey, as well as a whole bunch of other. That's Peter Sarsgaard. This is Alexander Skarsgård. But get your Sarsgaards and Skarsgaards in a row. Seriously, here's a great tip. And you love Diary of a Teenage Girl.
Yeah, it's very good.
So
Belle Polly is back in what's basically kind of a... not a romantic comedy, although it's in that category. She's Nathan Lane. She is from England. She goes to she comes to this country. Her dad is played by the great. Stop tape for a second. Okay, great. Her dad is played by Gabriel Byrne. He basically sends her to Harvard when she's 14 because she's super smart. Now she's living in New York. She's 19. She goes to see a shrink played by Nathan Lane. She works as a legal proofreader with Vanessa Bayer, and she kind of falls for Jason Ritter and William Moseley. She's really good in it, and I would say it's a solid B+ and a good little rental. Mrs. McCuddy and our daughter Lily, 16, looked at the trailer and said, "That's it. That's the money shot." So we sat back. We paid Spectrum way too much money. In this case, $4.95, and we enjoyed it. I mean, it's definitely a. Watch the trailer. If you like the trailer, you love the movie.
There you go. Well, as I was saying, I think that TV stuff is better than movies these days, and I'm very excited that next week. This Aziz Ansari show, Master of None, returns to Netflix.
Yeah, my friend works on that, and he said the stuff that they all do in Italy this year is really fun and funny.
And when they get back to New York, it's not funny?
A great deal of it has a big storyline that takes place over in Italy.
Well, my recommendation to everyone is if you have not seen the first season of Master of None, and there's only like 10 episodes, maybe 13, binge watch that and then check this new thing when it comes out because it is just terrific. It's a look at a modern day relationship in New York City and the way I won't even spoil the cliffhanger at the end of season one if you haven't.
You know,
seen
we
it,
talk about the movie Funny People all the time and we never talk about Aziz. Aziz has one of the best roles in that movie where he's like the hot comic that they all admire, but they talk shit about him because he's got this character, Randy, and he's like jumping around on the stage, kind of like Robin Williams. And they think it's shticky and terrible, but to his face, they're like, "You're the best." And like, it's really a character that he did for Judd and Seth and Jonah. And they said, "We're gonna make," and they were talking about making a Randy movie, but it hasn't happened. But he was so. That's sort of where I discovered him. And we always talk about the movie Funny People because we always say it's genuine. It's the way stand-up, it's one of the best movies about stand-up. And as many times as we've talked about it on the show and on this podcast, we never mention Aziz, and he's, I think, great. So I was just doing some house cleaning there.
Yeah, I also like the dynamic between Jason Schwartzman and Jonah Hill in that movie, if we're talking Funny People.
And Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah, but
she's like a little mouse. A little mouse you want to put your dick in. That's like, there's so many like lines like that.
Yeah, well, that's Judd. Judd is such a great writer, and he's just it's very, very funny. I saw Better Call Saul. Has anybody been watching Better Call Saul?
No.
I think it's almost up to the level of Breaking Bad. I mean, it's not like when they come out with like after MASH. Or or one of these shows, or Joey. Do we remember the short-lived Joey after Friends? This is, it's Vince Gilligan, and I think it's the cinematography is gorgeous, which it was in Breaking Bad, and it's set in the same place in New Mexico. So I think that it's the same.
Bob Odenkirk is a. Basically, an
you've never
ambulance.
Watched,
no, I never watched Breaking Bad either. I know,
unbelievable. Best show on TV.
I and tried. I never,
send me the hate email at tweet me at Bill McCuddy.
Yeah,
and he's basically an ambulance chasing lawyer.
Not at all. The Saul character who was in Breaking Bad was not an ambulance chaser. He was a lawyer that had a lot of connections with the crime world, and he could get anything done for you. He was not a major character in Breaking Bad.
Like a fixer, like Michael Clayton?
Well, no, he's played by Bob Odenkirk.
Right, as I
who
mentioned.
Who has a comedy background, so he was the comic relief. And
you do know I'm in the room, right?
What?
Okay, keep talking.
There's a what?
Keep going.
What's with the room? What did he say? What did I miss?
See, he doesn't know I'm here. All right, no, go ahead.
There was the first season. The guy who played Hank was sort of getting the funny lines, and he goes, "Once Bob Odenkirk came in, like in the middle of the second season or third season, that was it. Hank became a more serious character. All the laugh lines went to Bob Odenkirk. He's kind of like, I wouldn't say ambulance chaser, but he takes whatever he would advertise, like one of these firms that you see on
right.
television. But he had a lot of mob and crime connections. So
a little bit like Turturro in,
and it's a mob connection. He would have there were drug cartels, and he would have connections. So if you got in trouble, he would just know how to fix things.
Uh-huh.
Not like Michael Clayton, but you'd have to.
And
just
not
see.
Like John Turturro in the HBO thing, the all night.
No, they
the
changed. So anyway, yeah. So now they built the show around him. So they changed it, and it's a prequel. So now you see before he became this shifty kind of con man lawyer.
Right.
You see how. He was not that way in the beginning, and you're still waiting to see how he makes that transition. It's quite good, and this character who plays Mike in the show, played by Jonathan Banks, who was also in Breaking Bad, it's also his prequel and how he came into the world of crime with this character, Gus, who runs a chicken place but really is making crystal meth in a factory. It's tremendous. It's really so well written, and I highly recommend... I highly recommend Better Call Saul. Interesting show that we're doing today. Anything that we're bringing up, only one of us has seen it.
No. Well, we can talk a little bit about Cannes. The Cannes Film Festival starts in about 10 days.
We were supposed to have
days.
A guest today.
Yes, our friend Jeffrey Wells, who's been on the show before, is in town, said he was going to come by, but he forgot. So thanks, Jeff.
I wanted to ask him something, too, because there's a new rule starting next year at Cannes in that every film they show there has to have had a theatrical
right.
release and not be one of these Netflix
so
movies.
So Netflix is having a little difficulty. Two movies that they're premiering are going to be able to be shown in Cannes this year. But going forward, they've decided it has to be four-walled somewhere, which I think is kind of a cool idea. It's
the whole platform of the way we watch movies has changed dramatically. Does it have to play on a screen, which according to what you're saying, Bill Bregoli, it does, four wall. I mean, what is the difference between it getting...
Cause pretty sure
we've
I said
all
that.
Covered the Oscars, and you know that at the end of the year, they have... Sometimes they'll release a film for a week in one city, so it has
sure.
that...
Well, that's what
it fulfills
what
that requirement said. Of, okay, it was released theatrically. But yeah, so it's in one little theater somewhere in L.A. And
but like what doesn't make any sense about a film festival is it's going to premiere there. That's the four-wall theater in Cannes that it's going to premiere right. in. Why do they care where it goes after that? At least it's being shown first in a theater
but
there.
You could skirt around that so easily. I mean, you could just do like the Oscar thing. You could premiere it in Cannes and go, yes, it's going to have a theatrical release, and you just get some theater somewhere in New York.
Well, they can do that, but Netflix
one screen
is Netflix
in a
Claude
is cinema in New York.
You're missing the point of Netflix, which is they don't want that. Their whole platform is built on what you're saying. The wave of the future is not going to a theater
streaming.
To see movies. So they want to sort of stay true to their school. I mean, they're saying no, we're about streaming, and we want to premiere a movie at your film festival. And it doesn't matter where it ends up.
So unless they win an award like the Palme d'Or at Cannes or something.
If that happens this year for one of the two films, it's going to be hugely controversial.
If they do not, because of the fact that it's Netflix?
Because of the fact that next year that wouldn't be able to qualify, but this year it gets in.
Okay, so if they don't win that award, the grand prize or the uh-huh. audience award or whatever other awards they give out at Cannes, does Netflix really care? I mean, if their whole... I mean, what is the advantage? Usually, I mean, Cannes is a buyer's market. People bring films to Cannes,
right.
generally speaking, and try to get distributors. Or there is a high-profile studio that will have the premiere there, so they'll
have
the red carpet.
Yeah, it's all about the buzz.
Later.
Yeah, it's all about the buzz.
You get to put that little fleur-de-lis kind of thing in your ad. Right. Right. Winner, blah, blah, blah.
Or they don't even have to win. We see movies all the time that just was at Cannes, and it just shows the logo like it won something.
Yeah.
Right. So is that what it's all about?
Well, I think it is for Netflix. Sure. I think it is for Amazon. I think they want to be taken seriously. They want to play on an equal playing ground with critics who are looking at these films. So, yeah, I think it's important.
Well, we were talking about this, Bill and I, the other day, about the fact that, you know, film festivals, you know, there are so many movies. I mean, Cannes is a prestigious film festival, and so is Sundance, and so is Toronto. But there's just so many film festivals where the films get into these festivals and they just kind of die in a vine. They don't get distributorship.
Right. You know? In fact, some films go around from festival to festival to festival and don't get picked up.
And we've talked about how the fact that, you know, these filmmakers, you could see how excited they are that they're accepted into these film festivals, Cannes notwithstanding. And you just kind of know that the vast majority of these films are just never going to get picked up, you know? But Cannes is a different animal, but I wonder what the percentage rate of that is, really. You know, that's also like a show. You know, it's like unlike the Dallas Film Festival or something like that. I mean, Cannes is, you know, it's glitzy, it's on the Riviera, it's got the red carpets, people, all the paparazzi is there.
So you're answering your own question. I mean, that's why Netflix would want to be there if they could, and the fact that they're going to be barred, I think, is going to be kind of interesting going forward. So.
And you had also mentioned this, Bill McCuddy, that of all the Oscar nominees last year, they weren't, didn't we talk about this, that they weren't coming from major studios? They were coming from like Amazon Studios.
Well, several. I mean, enough that it was significant. And I think that that's going to get more and more popular. I think that, look, they're hungry for content. They're greenlighting things that might take longer.
Maybe they should greenlight Talking Pictures, our television.
Yes, that's...
You know, maybe that would be a great vehicle for... Are you listening, Amazon? Are you listening, Netflix?
I don't think based on today's show they would. Hey, but other shows. We've done great ones. And so let's sort of recap here. This was a lousy show. Jeff Wells didn't come. we're pissed. And
I'm the only one who saw the movie.
What are we seeing next week?
Next week I'm seeing the new Alien movie, which I actually already saw.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wells saw that. I was going to ask him about it if he was here.
You know, the trailer looks just...
He absolutely hated it, by the way. I'm hearing some good things about it, so I'm sort of interested to see it.
Yeah, I'll save it for next week, but it's worth watching. Absolutely.
What about The Wall? He was going to talk about The Wall.
Yeah. Oh, we had such plans for Jeff. Maybe he'll link us. Maybe he'll on his site, he'll link to
this.
He's
going to talk about this new Netflix drama with Brad Pitt. Yeah. All these things.
Yeah, we had big plans for you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Maybe on his way back from Cannes, he'll stop in New York.
What are you looking forward to seeing this summer?
Jeffrey, we hope so.
What are you looking forward to seeing?
Oh, there's nothing original. Everything is a superhero or a... Frankly, as an early summer blockbuster, I was really looking forward to Guardians 2, and I was underwhelmed.
There's a one weird little thing that you can watch the Red Band trailer for, and I recommend you do, called The Little Hours.
I'm dying to see that. In fact, I asked them yesterday. So we talked about this on the show a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? The Aubrey Plaza, it's a Dirty Nuns movie. It's set in the Middle Ages, and the nuns. John C. Reilly is a priest. Aubrey Plaza is like banging. They're nuns, but they're banging everybody.
So offensive and yet interesting at the same time.
I gotta see it. Who was the publicist that sent us a thing yesterday about it?
I'm like, on it too.
Adam Kirsch, I think. I'm like, Adam, please send me a link to this. So yeah, I'm dying to see that. You're right. I am looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to really offend a lot of like devout people.
Wait.
And even maybe not so devout. I mean, it's, it's about nuns. Well, why don't you give a little description about what it's about?
It's raunchy nuns, I said. Yeah, will you start listening to me? We got to get him some headphones or something.
Nudity.
It's just a raunchy nuns film from the Middle Ages.
I love the quote. It has actually some very good quotes, and then it has somebody from the Catholic Church. This is the most offensive thing I've ever seen. They use
of course,
the quote because
the Catholic League. Yeah.
I know. So let's talk about that as well. Any other thoughts, Bill Bregoli?
No, that's it for me. Next week, we'll be doing this from my apartment, or as I call it, the Museum of Masculinity.
Why is it the Museum of Masculinity?
You find out. Bill's going to get 10 minutes worth of material out of my apartment next week.
Wait.
I can't wait.
By the way, just a note, if anybody saw the Late Show with Stephen Colbert this week, it was a reunion with all the original Daily Show correspondents.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. They had great ratings.
Steve Carell, because he was off somewhere filming a movie, but John Oliver was there, Ed Helms was there, Samantha Bee was there, John Stewart was there, Rob Corddry was there.
Did Carell send a video or do anything goofy like...
Well, they did a skit, and then they just sat around kind of like... It was like they even said this is like The View. They had one of these giant couches where everybody was there. But they showed clips of all of their first,
Carell, no video from Carell.
No, but John Oliver said he was in this opening skit. He goes, "I'm Steve Carell," like he was pretending to be Steve Carell. It's quite funny, but I did think that was the great era of the Daily Show when all these people were on it. So Colbert was kind of interesting that he did a tribute to that, and I found that to be very interesting.
Great ratings for
again,
him.
Again, nobody's seen that but me in the tradition of this podcast of the three of us sitting here. You know, is there anything we've all seen that we could talk about before we sign off on the thing?
Just my apartment.
That's right. What a nice apartment, don't you think?
It's lovely. It's nice pets. It's really nice.
Just
pets.
As nice as yours. We
dog
have three bedrooms
nice.
And
cat is nice.
I have two bedrooms.
All right, so, and we're in an upscale. We look at Central Park, and you look
fancy
at what
schmancy.
Second
All right,
Avenue.
So we look
anyway,
forward to the what is the Museum of Masculinity?
Yeah, that's what we call
can't
it.
Wait.
Okay, this will be really.
This
really
is like going to Ron Burgundy's house. All right.
All right. Well, anyway, if you've been with us this long.
Bless you.
Through the podcast. Congratulations.
If you've been waiting for Jeffrey Wells, he's not coming.
And Lisa will be back with us soon. She's off on assignment. And thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. And we will sit around talking movies with you again next week. For Bill Bregoli, Bill McCuddy.
Bye-bye.
And Neil Rosen. We'll see you soon.